Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Classic FM. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning appointment, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, country, rock, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from the websites BBC Music Magazine and ClassicFM.com. Question number one. All except one of the following composers died in their 30s. Which one of these composers lived beyond their 30s? Was that A, Franz Schubert? Was it B, Frédéric Chopin? Was it C, Felix Mendelssohn? Or was it D, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart? Or E, Ludwig van Beethoven? Which one of those composers, in fact, lived the longest? And question number two. What were the famous last words of that composer named above? Was it A, I kept telling them I was sick? Is it B, applaud, friends, the comedy is ended? Or was it C, either that wallpaper goes or I do? Or was it D? I believe that a life lived for music is an existence spent wonderfully, and this is what I've dedicated my life to. So, what were that composer's famous last words, anyway? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from the website onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of February 17th. Well, it was on this day back in 1735 that the very first opera performed in America, Flora, or Hob in the Well, was presented in Charleston, South Carolina. First opera in America, 1735, today. And it was 17 years ago today, 2006, in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, that the Rolling Stones gave a free concert before a crowd of over 1 million people at Copacabana Beach. 2006, today.
If you're traveling to the North Country Fair, where the winds hit heavy on the borderline, remember me to one who lives there. For she once was a true love of mine.
See for me that her hair's hanging down.
And in country music news, it was on this very day back in 1969 that Johnny Cash and Bob Dylan had a recording session in Nashville, Tennessee. Girl from the North Country, the song playing in the background now, was the only duet released from that session. In 1962, Dylan visited England for the very first time. Here, he met many local folk artists, including Martin Carthy, who introduced Dylan to many traditional English ballads, including Scarborough Fair. Dylan would lift the line, "Remember me to one who lives there. She once was a true love of mine." From this ballad, for Girl from the North Country, Dylan and Johnny Cash collaborated on a joint version of that song for Dylan's 1969 album, Nashville Skyline. Nashville Skyline marked a stark change in Dylan's vocals. He had developed a baritone country croon that he claimed was a result of his decision to quit smoking cigarettes. When I stopped smoking, my voice changed so drastically I couldn't believe it myself, he told Rolling Stone on April 9, 2019. While Nashville Skyline is often remembered for its quaint lyrical themes and simple songwriting structures, it's also one of Dylan's most unique vocal performances. Known for his interesting vocal tone, Dylan's voice changed drastically from record to record, but Nashville Skyline was the first to introduce a low crooning tone. Johnson says he had nothing to do with the change in timbre. It was all due to Dylan himself.
Well, the winds get heavy on the borderline. Remember me to one who lives there. For she once was a true love.
That album was released on April 9, 1969 by Columbia Records. Despite the dramatic shift in direction, the press gave the record a warm reception. Rolling Stone wrote, "Nashville Skyline achieves the artistically impossible, a deep, humane, and interesting statement about being happy. It could well be the best album." It did, in fact, go on to become one of Dylan's best-selling albums, reaching number 3 in the U.S. and eventually being certified platinum by the RIAA. Now, more than 50 years later, Nashville Skyline withstands the test of time as one of the greatest country records. And in classical music news, when was the organ invented? Oliver Condy presents an overview of this most noble and awe-inspiring of instruments, the organ. Published in BBC Music Magazine on the 2nd of February 2023, Oliver Condy. It's certainly the loudest, arguably the quietest, and undoubtedly the most complicated instrument ever built. And at almost 2,500 years old, it's among the oldest. But it's also perhaps the least understood of instruments, even among the greatest artistic figures of our time. The organ has split opinion. Stravinsky once complained that the monster never breathes, no doubt referring to the fact that when a key is depressed, the sound continues until it's released. And conductor Thomas Beecham, who had snippy remarks for everything, spluttered that it was a mechanical box of whistles. Poet John Dryden, however, thought it a wondrous machine. Mozart considered it the king of instruments and the arbiter of musical taste. Grove Dictionary of Music wrote in 1878 that it was the most perfect musical instrument. Whichever side of the fence you sit on, it can't be denied that some of the most glorious music has been written for the organ. From Couperin's stately masses to Elgar's symphonic sonata. From the thrilling music of 17th century Spanish composer Cabanillas to the gloriously exotic sound worlds of Messiaen. And at around 15 hours in duration, J.S. Bach's organ output, the greatest of all, is the largest written for a single instrument. But if you find the idea of the organ's multiple keyboards, knobs, buttons, and other appendages a tad overwhelming, we're here to help. But first, some brief history. It's not certain when the first organ popped up. The Chinese Cheng has been around for more than 5,000 years, its forest of pipes bearing more than a passing resemblance to the organ, and rows of flutes such as the panpipes or the sphinx are as old as the wheel. But an organ that could be played without human lungs was probably invented around 265 B.C. by Greek engineer and barber Ctesibius, and it was a piece of apparatus in his barber shop that first inspired him. A counterpoise weight for a mirror would move up and down a cylindrical tube, compressing the air and producing a note. An intrigued Ctesibius built his hydraulis, water organ, along the same principles, using water to regulate the pressure of the air supply. References to the hydraulis, which over the centuries became more and more sophisticated, can be found in ancient Roman and Arabic literature. In fact, the Arabs were world leaders in organ manufacture and made such fine instruments that Emperor Charlemagne ordered one for a church in Aachen in 812 A.D., causing a member of the congregation to faint in ecstasy. The organ, as we know it, with visible pipes played via keyboard, started to appear in churches and monasteries from around 700 A.D., and by the end of the 10th century, the organ could be found in many places of Christian worship around Britain. The organ's golden age came after 1740. Technology allowing ever louder and more complex instruments as music in Germany and France became less liturgical and more virtuosic. The real giants arrived in the 19th century, five manual monsters. If the 20th century has added much to the organ world, it's technology in the form of playing aids, pedal and manual pistons, electric key action, efficient electrically powered wind supply, and the ability to incorporate a bewildering number of stops in any one instrument. Contemporary composers have responded with music of dazzling variety and invention. But the irony, perhaps, is that new organs today are often copies of 18th century masterpieces. The Royal College of Music's new three-manual Flintrope, for instance, is an homage to 300-year-old craftsmanship and all the better for it. And in music research and technology, we have this article titled, Music on the Brain. Listening can influence our brain's activity. The Mozart effect isn't real, but music does affect our mental processes. This is published in ArsTechnica.com by Abdullah Iqbal on the 24th of September, 2022. People have long tried to use music as a tool to improve their abilities. Soldiers chanted songs when marching into battle, sailors sang songs on long voyages, and clothmakers sang when weaving. But do we have any evidence that music makes a difference for any of our activities? We've only recently started to ask that question scientifically. It began with the Mozart effect, which seemed to link classical music to improve mental performance. Named after the famous composer, it was shorthand for the apparent boost in IQ tests that people listening to his music experienced. But the phenomena turned out not to be real. Background music was thought to help with work. It was found to be the noise stopping the person from being distracted, says Professor Concetta Tomaino. executive director and co-founder of the Institute for Music and Neurologic Function. However, research into music and its effects on human abilities continued and eventually resulted in the discovery of an effect called brain entrainment, which appears capable of improving memory focus, sleep, and physical activity. The technique involves manipulating some of the waves of activity that are part of normal brain behavior. Beyond these frequency effects, the exact benefits of different types of music are still hotly debated. Some researchers suspect that brain entrainment has a very large effect regardless of the type of music. This group includes Adam Hewitt, who has worked on using music to improve human abilities for nearly two decades, and is co-founder of Evoked Response, a company that provides music it claims improves individual capabilities. However, there are others, such as Mari Tervaningme, research director of the Center of Excellence in Music, Mind, Body, and Brain at the University of Helsinki, who differ. In most cases, it is the favorite music which is beneficial to changing the emotional state. Positive emotions can then also contribute to improving cognition. It depends on the music that person likes, she told ARS. However, she does caution that there are very few studies on South America or Africa, so any cultural differences in how music is appreciated remain unexplored. There is evidence that the music itself matters. A study with 50 volunteers used brain entrainment that simulated theta brain waves but used different means of doing so, either white noise or music. A simple memory test showed that those listening to music saw a much greater boost in performance. However, everyone we talked to agreed that music does have an effect. But how large is this effect and how long does it last? That is a question researchers have been struggling with for quite some time. Research indicates that the effects can be wide-ranging, from improving memory to increasing attention. However, these effects do not last forever. You can use it for one or two sessions throughout the day. More than this, and you would adapt to the music, limiting its effect. There is some data on how long changes last following exposure to music. Music produced by Evoked Response has been shown to increase focus in an attention-based task, and the effects seem to last well after the music was shut off. We don't know how long the effects last, but an improvement was seen compared to those without music after 2 hours from the session, says Shay Hewitt. Evoked Response and others have found similar timing when music was used to influence memory, physical activity, and attention. Effects last for 1 to 2 hours after the music listening phase. Another study looking into the effects of sleep showed that individuals who listened to music as they fell asleep saw an increase in their slow wave oscillations, brain waves of a certain frequency, which occur during the later hours of sleep and are essential for memory consolidation. The group that also used the specially crafted music showed a doubling in their time spent in deep sleep and over a halving in the same time taken to fall asleep. While some people are excited about the prospects of using music to boost everyday performance, others have tested it for its therapeutic value. Many studies in this area are normally focused on people with pathological conditions such as Alzheimer's disease, insomnia, and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, says Tomino. For example, music has been shown to improve memory of dementia patients or focus for people with ADHD. But the greatest effect is on those with Parkinson's disease, which is marked by uncontrollable movements. Training with music can lead to a recovery of movement, and the effects are seen instantly. Given that listening to music has a long history and is deeply ingrained in many cultures, it's tempting to view these results as a clear benefit. But the benefit is unlikely to be uniform. For example, there are people who suffer from amusia. These people do not detect musical pitch and so will not get an effect from music. Amusia may be as common as dyslexia and is currently poorly studied. We also don't know whether the benefits of music are influenced by the interaction between the type of music and the culture and the background of the listener. Finally, it's important to recognize that improving focus and memory aren't always benefits. Laura Cabrera, a professor of engineering at Penn State, suggested, "Some memories you want to strengthen, but some memories you want to weaken. All memory is related. And as the above should make clear, we're still in the process of learning the details and limitations of how music influences human performance. So, by all means, enjoy your favorite music. Just have reasonable expectations about the benefits." Fleetwood Mac's Rhiannon introduces our local music news. It's titled "Stand Back." Rock legend Stevie Nicks is coming to Raleigh's PNC Arena. This is written by Colleen Hammond, January 23, 2023, News and Observer. Living legend and rock icon Stevie Nicks has announced she will be coming to Raleigh this spring. Kicking off the second leg of her Live in Concert tour, Nicks will be playing PNC Arena on Friday, May the 12th. The Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, known for her enduring solo career and roots as a member of Fleetwood Mac, is heading to 13 cities across the U.S. this year. Tickets went on sale to everyone through Ticketmaster on January 27. Nicks has been named to countless best-of lists for her work as a singer and songwriter with both Fleetwood Mac and as a solo artist. Her Fleetwood Mac songs include Dreams, Rhiannon, and Landslide. Her solo hits include Edge of 17, Leather and Lace, and Stand Back. So how'd you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, all, except one, of the following composers died in their 30s. Which one of these composers lived beyond their 30s? Was it A, Franz Schubert? Nope. Schubert died of syphilis at age 31. Was it B, Frédéric Chopin? No, he died of tuberculosis at age 39. Was it C, Felix Mendelssohn? He died of a brain aneurysm at age 38. Was it D, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart? He died at age 35 of either poisoning or a strep infection of the kidneys. Or was it E, Ludwig van Beethoven? Yes, that's the correct answer. He is the only one of those five who lived beyond their 30s. And as noted on NPR and in a PBS.org article, by the time he was 45, Beethoven was totally deaf and unable to converse unless he passed written notes back and forth to his colleagues, visitors, and friends. But he lived until the age of 56, when he died of lead poisoning. And the answer to our second question, what were the famous last words of that composer, Beethoven? Oh, was it A, I kept telling them I was sick? Was it B, applaud, friends, the comedy is ended? Was it C, either that wallpaper goes or I do? Or was it D, I believe that a life lived for music is an existence spent wonderfully, and this is what I've dedicated my life to? Well, the correct answer? Probably answer B, applaud, friends, the comedy is ended. But as noted in ClassicFM.com, while it is often thought that Beethoven's last word were those 1827 words spoken in Latin, his parting gift to the world was probably far less cerebral. Turns out that after a publisher bought Beethoven 12 bottles of wine as a gift, the dying composer held out a bit longer to utter these final words, "Pity, pity, too late." By the way, Oscar Wilde is credited in 1900 with the last words listed in answer C, "either that wallpaper goes or I do." He had compared his well-being to the wallpaper in his room at the Left Bank Hotel that he seemed to hate. After his death, the wallpaper was taken off and the room was redesigned to look like one of the rooms in Oscar's London flat where he lived. Finally, as noted in WordPress.com, Luciano Pavarotti in 2007 voiced the famous last words of answer D, "I believe that a life lived for music is an existence spent wonderfully, and this is what I've dedicated my life to." So let's close out today's program with Pavarotti's Nessun Dorma, which translates as "None Shall Sleep." Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program is also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words: kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program intended for people who are blind and print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos since 1968. More information? Schedule a piano tuning. Call 919-779-1755. So long until next time.